So the borrow is super important, if not maybe even more important than the deal, in my opinion. I always bet on the jockey before the horse, because that is something that if when I lend, I don't just lend on one deal. I want to keep my money moving, right? So in order to keep my money moving, I would like to redeploy that funds again and again and again, so that I don't have to go find a new deal. I don't have to go find a new borrower. I could just say, hey, you got a new deal? Just let's do another one.
Whether you're thinking about adding private money lending to your portfolio, or you're on your 10th deal, this podcast is just for you. Grow with Lila is for everyday people who want to grow their passive income, take more control over their investments, and get into real estate without swinging a hammer. Hey, I'm your host, Lila Zayed. I've been standing up new lines of revenue for 20 years. And after doing everything from building sales teams to monetizing solutions to bringing early stage B2B SaaS startups to market, I decided to dive headfirst into the world of private money lending, where even the modest returns are in double digits. As investing goes, private money lending is one of the more risky strategies. And even when your capital is secured by real estate, it can be a big effort to collect on that. So it helps that I'm a fish in water where there are tons of unknowns and hazards abound. I'm walking a few steps ahead, testing the riskiest hypotheses first, and I am sharing all my notes. Everything from big ideas to actionable step-by-step tactics that get results, so you can choose the right path for your own investments on your private money lending journey. Listen in to reveal the key decisions every PML faces before you face them, and learn how to manage your risk, all while growing your entrepreneurial skills and mindset. Whether you're PML curious or an accomplished lender, each episode is designed to help you take immediate action on the most important strategies for starting and growing your private money lending business today. Today, we're diving into systems and strategies to organize and maximize deal flow while protecting your investments. Our guest, Colin Yep, a seasoned capital raiser and connector, is here to share how he helps private money lenders find the right deals to succeed. You know, when I first started lending, I didn't realize how critical it was to have systems in place. Colin is the guy I wish I had had in my back pocket when I first got started, and I know that the insights he can share with you today are going to help you in that special, impactful way. So a little bit about Colin, a capital raiser and connector for private money lenders. He is also expert in process and systems to scale operations, and his current focus, capital raising and scaling, and also growing a home service business. So Colin, welcome to Grow with Lila.
Hi, Lila. Nice to meet you. Nice to be here. I'm happy to be here. I'm super excited. Thank you for having me.
Colin, I'd really like to ask you to begin by sharing a little bit about your backstory, about what inspired you to get into this line of business, and what drew you to working with private money lenders.
Yeah, so I'm actually I'm still in my W-2 job, right? So I am I work in a pharmaceutical company. So I do my day job, and what actually inspired me to do this is I'm the only one working in my family right now and bringing in the income. So post-COVID, I was, hey, what happens if something did happen to me? I got two kids, a stay-at-home mom. So if income stopped coming into me, right, that would be a problem, right? My family won't have enough to survive. I needed to figure out a different way to generate passive income. And so I started, you know, looking at bigger pockets or Googling first, right? Everybody starts with Googling. I actually read the Rich Dad Poor Dad book, and everybody has, right? And that's how I got started too. Actually, you know, looked at how real estate was actually one of those that kept going up in terms of, you know, the investments, right? So I jumped on that. I watched a ton of videos, educated myself, and then stumbled upon Pace. And that's where I found the community and just said, hey, you know what? Let me take a stab at this and let me take some action. I was on the back end for like 10 months, 10 to 12 months, just, reading all the books I can, watching all the videos and downloading everything and try to just understand a whole different industry, right, to what I'm used to. And so when that happened, I was like, okay, I think I'm ready to go. And then I did my first deal, right? Outside of the community, I am actually a private money lender myself. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take the first step. And I jumped in, right? My first deal was actually $100,000, 100,000 lend. So that was a big deal for me. And so it was a scary, scary time. Because I didn't really have anybody that kind of taught me or walked me through the process. Granted that the deal was successful and it was great because I worked with somebody local to me and pre-lending money to him, I was actually at the site and meeting him in person, having lunches, building the rapport, right? So that was super critical for that because you don't want to lend money to somebody that you have not met or at least don't know, the person or the deal, right? So it was actually gave me a lot of confidence in doing the deal because I built that relationship with that person. Yeah, so I did jump onto that deal and started my private money lending journey, I would say, right? And I realized fairly quickly that I had no idea what I was doing in terms of like I had the I'm like, what's next? I was actually relying on the borrower to tell me what was next, right? He was, okay, here's my attorney. I'm going to put you in contact with my attorney. You're going to draft these notes and blah, 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 right? And I was just kind of taking notes as I went, trial by fire, right? Right. So then I was, just doing that and learning the process as I completed the deal. And as I started to learn more, I started to say, hey, you know what? Maybe it'll be a good idea to start putting a checklist together. Maybe it's a good idea to start figuring out this process so I can do better the next time around. Right. And that's where I started. Instead of, Googling or YouTubing real estate investments or, creative finance, I started looking into private money lending. Right. How do I private money lend? How do I protect myself? What are the security documents? And so that's where I was like, okay, here are the things that we need. Here are the things that we need. Here's an additional thing that we need. So I came up with a process for my own self so that I could lend safely. And I started off with vet the deal, vet the borrower, right? You vet the deal and then you vet the borrower. Those are the two main steps that you have to start off with whenever you do a private money lending deal. So so that's how I started building my process and my systems is, starting off doing the deal and then learning from others. I mean, when you're starting off, it's always a little bit scary. And what I did was I started talking to people in the community. I started meeting a ton of people and I started learning what people were doing, how they were underwriting the deal. And I would get on Zooms, I would get on accountability calls, and people would be talking about the deals and be like, hey, don't forget to do this. And I would take that note and I'll put it into my system, to my checklist. I'm like, don't forget to do this, right? And they're like, don't forget to do that. And someone would say, oh, I did this deal, it didn't go by so well. It didn't go down so well. So I should have done this. Then I would take that, put it in my system. Right. So every time someone said something like, and you need to be always continuously improving, right? There's always room for improvement. There's always additional stuff that you can be prepared. Now, you can have a system that has, a ton of things in there. It's basically how low do you want to buy down that risk, right? It can never be zero, but you can always implement those checks based on your level of risk. And that's where I kind of list out everything and then say, okay, is this really necessary, or do I really need to go down this path, or am I okay with 75% of my checklist, right? It all depends really. And if I do the deal again with the borrower, the same borrower, maybe I don't need to do another round of, background credit check, right? Or maybe I don't need to go through and verify his LLCs again if I'm just doing it, you know, over and over again and doing a repeat deal with the same person.
I hear two essentials in your story there, and they are, number one, writing down everything that needs to be done so that you can, you know, follow that process a second time and don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time. But maybe even more importantly, I hear that you're learning from other people. You're in community with other real estate investors who are willing to share their information. Talk to me a little bit about that. How are you finding peers to work with?
So I'm in the Gator community and in the Sub2 community, right? So first of all, what I do is I look up people around my area, the accountability groups that are in your local areas, right? The local meetups that are in your area. So a couple of things you would always want to start off with, and always in person is always better, right? So if there's any local REAs in your area, those are the ones that you really want to get to so that you can actually meet people there and start having those conversations. Secondly, you know, again, reaching out to joining accountability calls through the community where they have a call for each area specific to those to your area. So I would do that, and I would keep the names of people that I meet, right? And also people in the Zooms. I would look out for people who are saying, hey, I'm okay lending. I'm doing a lot of lending. And there's a lot of Zooms out there surrounding how to lend safely, lending Zooms, right? You can jump on those calls. And then all the people that are leaders in those Zooms, or the people that are speaking up, or the people that are sharing their stories, I'm going after those people because I want to educate myself. I want to make sure I protect myself. So what I do is I reach out to those list of people and try to get on a Zoom with them, get on a call with them and just say, hey, talk to me about your experiences. What are the goods? What are the bads? You know, tell me some stories of, you know, how successful you are and what your failures are and what you do differently. Right. And that's how I just kept doing it. And I was actually, you know, meeting an average of 5 people every day. There was a time where I had, you know, 10, 11 people a day. And there were times where I had, you know, 1 or 2 people a day. But if you're consistent enough, you average out to be around 5. And that's where I was meeting a lot of people. They were sharing their stories. They were teaching me things. I was teaching them things. And then it got to a point where my list grew significantly from a contact list standpoint, but also from a checklist standpoint, right? And then I said, okay, there's too many things here. Now I need to create a system so that I can each deal that I'm going to do, I need to adhere to that system so that I know that if the deal went bad, I know that I did everything I could to reduce the risk, right? And that's so, so important when you're actually dealing with private money lending, because you can never, ever predict something that's outside your system, right? And that's the risk portion that you always have to take into account, right? So that's always super important in that sense.
All right, we're going to come back to that in just a moment. But first, I want to let our listeners know that those communities that you mentioned, we're going to have links for Gator and Sub2 in the show notes. So if you're not yet a member of those communities and you're interested, go get some more information there. That's how Colin and I know one another. We're both in Gator together. And when I first came into Gator, I was doing exactly what you're talking about, Colin. I was absolutely looking for the folks who were already lending so I could learn from them. I was reaching out to them. I was doing everything I can to just learn from them and to provide value to them so that they'd be willing to hang out with me and share what they had figured out so far. And so, you know, you were one of those people that I reached out to, Colin, and learned so much from. There were a number of deals that when I was first learning how to vet deals, I just, you know, it amazed me because it would take me an hour to come up with an answer that took you 30 seconds. I would bring Colin a deal and say, all right, here's the situation. And, you know, and I'm not really sure if I should do this, because when I first began to consider private money lending, all I could see were the returns. I couldn't see beyond what that ROI was going to be. And that's how I knew it wasn't time for me to deploy capital, that I needed to have a deeper understanding of how to manage my risk. But listener, I want to let you know that I would hand those deals off to Colin and he'd ask me two questions. And within 30 seconds, he'd say, don't do it. Wait for the right deal. Colin, you really did a lot to build your reputation with me as someone who is not only knowledgeable, but really helps lenders to manage their risk. So you were beginning to tell us a little bit about how your checklists got crazy. They just got really, really long. And you knew that you needed to have a process, a repeatable process, in order to make sure that you were moving through these checkpoints. Tell us a little bit more about how you manage risk and how you help private money lenders do that for themselves in their own loans.
Right. So how I manage the risk is, first of all, the numbers need to work. Right. You can look at the returns all day. You can be drawn, like you said, to the returns. And if the numbers aren't great and something goes wrong and you don't have enough buffer in the numbers to actually make the deal work, you may never see the returns. Right. You may never see the returns. Right. So it's super important to know that the numbers work. And how I approach it is, I don't underwrite the deal to the primary exit. So if someone says, I have a deal, my exit is going to sell, to flip the property, and I'm going to pay you back with that flip. Right. And so you're looking at numbers. You're like, oh, okay, this is how much I'm going to get. And hopefully he sells. What happens if there was an issue with the construction? What if, you know, the market tanks and now nobody's, you know, buying, right? What happens if the interest rates goes up through the roof and everybody's holding on and nobody wants to buy or sell their own home to buy a new house, right? So now you're in a position where you may be in a deal that may look like a good flip on paper, but in reality, it could be an issue. And maybe it could even be a timing issue, right? So let's say you do a deal in June or July and it's a 6-month flip and you're in New Hampshire, like I am, and come 6 months, it's in December and nobody buys a house during Christmas or after Thanksgiving and it's snowing and, you know, there's like 4 foot of snow. Nobody's going to move in, you know, in December. So, you know, you also have to keep in mind, right, from a timing perspective, the market, the supply and demand, whether or not you're going to close during wintertime, right? The season's super important because we all know it's going to be slower, right? So when I look at the deal, I don't look at it just from a return standpoint, but I say, hey, you know, in 6 months, it's going to be Christmas. Are you sure? Right? And then I say, okay, what if? So go down the questions now and ask those super important questions. What if you don't sell? What is your backup plan? And if the backup plan, they would say, hey, you know what? If it doesn't sell, maybe I will refi it. I'll refi it and I'll pay you back for the refi. So then now you know, okay, I have a secondary exit. So what you do is you don't underwrite the deal to the primary exit. You underwrite the deal to the backup strategy, right? So do you know primary always work? If your backup strategy works, then you know your primary is going to work. So you have two exits. So, and then you want to go another step deeper. You say, hey, I'm going to underwrite it to my backup exit, right? So you say, so how I do it in terms of the primary backup is, okay, if you're going to refi, what are the banks in your local area going to offer you? Right. Most banks will refi at, you know, 85% ARV, or 90% or 75%, and if majority of lenders do 75 to 80%, then you want to make sure when you underwrite the deal that at the 75% ARV, then it's going to include your loan as well and interest. Because if you're outside that amount, you may not get your money back during the refi process. And that would mean that you would likely lose money if they had to refi. So I always underwrite to the refi exit if it's that backup. And then I also try to look at what happens if they don't refi. And someone may ask you, well, what situations would that occur in? And sometimes somebody's credit gets hit. What if your borrower's credit gets hit, right? He may be at 750 or 700, and the refi criteria is you need to be a credit score of 680. What happens if his credit score dings and drops to 650 in the next 6 months and he's not qualified to refi? What then? Right? So then you have to look at it from a, hey, you know, can I rent it out? Right? Am I able to just hold and rent? And maybe does the market rent, you know, you may have to take over the property. What does that look like? Right? If you take it over, is it going to be a situation where you'll be able to rent it out and keep it? Right? So you always, and they always say this, right? Lend to own.
Right. Loan to own, baby.
Loan to own. Yes, right.
That's right. I mean, it's such an important insight that you're sharing, Colin, that we should underwrite to it. The riskiest hypothesis is how I think of it. I come from software startups, and that's sort of how we talk about just thinking about risk. And, you know, the loan to own is really the riskiest hypothesis. If I actually have to come and take my security, what's going to be involved in that? How much is it going to cost me just to go through the process of, you know, of taking and collecting on my security? And then what? Mm-hmm. Am I in a position to handle the carrying costs and to monetize this security that I have? Or will I turn it into a liability because I didn't have a plan for that?
Exactly.
Talk to me about borrowers. So you gave us some really great examples about how you assess the viability of a deal. But the deal is just one factor to consider. There's also the borrower, as well as any other lenders that may be involved in a deal together. Talk to me a little bit about how you then vet the various players in a deal.
Right. So the borrower is as important as the numbers, right? You can have the best numbers in the world, the safest numbers in the world, but if your borrower disappears on you, you will not get those numbers. You will not get that money back. You could foreclose, but then it'll probably take a long time if you cannot find the borrower, right? Or he ghosts you or he disappears, and it just be a logistical nightmare. And nobody wants to go through that situation. So in order to save yourself a ton of headaches and attorney fees and foreclosure processes, right, you want to make sure that you're dealing with someone that is trustworthy, someone you have a good relationship with. So when people come up to me and say, hey, I need money, my immediate instinct is no, because I don't know you. Right. But if someone says, hey, I'd like to get to know you a little bit. I am a flipper in this area. I do a lot of deals. Here's what my portfolio looks like. What is your story? Tell me a little bit more about you. You know, and build that relationship rather than coming up to some random person and say, oh, you're a lender. I need this much amount of money. Right. It's always a tricky situation because who's going to lend money to someone you don't know? Right. So the borrower is super important, if not maybe even more important than the deal, in my opinion. I always bet on the jockey before the horse, because that is something that when I lend, I don't just lend on one deal. I want to keep my money moving, right? So in order to keep my money moving, I would like to redeploy that funds again and again and again, so that I don't have to go find a new deal. I don't have to go find a new borrower. I can just say, hey, you got a new deal? Let's do another one, right? And I know that, you know, I can put my trust in that borrower because, you know, we've done a deal together right? And based on the relationship, that's where you get a little bit more confidence. Now, when I vet the deal and then I move on to vetting the borrower, I have a checklist for that too, right? And that checklist entails a lot of, I would say a lot of steps, right? From background credit checks to LLC searches to making sure the LLC is, you know, in good standing, and then looking through and making sure that there's no foreclosures in any of the LLCs, right? But also at the same time, getting on a Zoom, doing a sniff test, right? It's so important to get a Zoom, do a sniff test. But then on top of that, I make sure I get a picture of their licenses, right? Because you can take a picture of the license or you have a Zoom, but if you don't know who you're talking to, and line them both up together. So that's what I do. I get a picture of the license. I look at it from the Zoom. I record the Zoom and make sure that that person is who they say they are, right? And match them up. One of the other things that I do as well is calling the references, right? They can tell you, here's my reference, or I don't have a reference, and you don't really feel comfortable knowing whether he's a good borrower, whether he's communicative, whether he, you know, is too busy for you, right? They may be really communicative up front, but who knows after you close whether they're going to maintain that same amount of energy once they got your money, right? So it's so important to build that relationship. And like I said, in my first deal, I was going out for lunches, right? I was meeting that borrower every other week to just, you know, walk the deals, work with the property that I was working on, build that relationship and build that trust, right? So that list is pretty detailed. I do go through tying in the references with the existing or previous HUDs, right? We have video walkthroughs with the borrower as well, making sure he is the owner of the property and he has access to the property, right? Because a lot of times someone may send you, not a lot of times, but occasionally if someone's trying to scam you, they would send you a video of someone else's deal, right? So you want to make sure you see his face, you want to make sure him or her face, and you know, them walking through the property, you know, and talking about where things are going to go and just, you know, verification in that way. So any type of verification you can do is super important to make sure you feel comfortable with that person. And any type of red flags should really, you know, keep that in mind, that if there is one red flag, you need to make sure that you resolve that. If there's one red flag, in my opinion, like if I'm more excited about the deal than that person is, or I'm more urgent about, hey, you know, tell me, I need this document, I need this thing, and he's dragging his feet on providing information or providing documents or vetting documents or whatnot, then I feel like, okay, he's going to be a problem later down the road.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, Colin. Something that that can happen is not just dragging feet, but even why are you asking me for these documents? Do you ever run into that? And what are your thoughts around that as a lender when you ask for documentation and you're doing your diligence and you're really looking to verify who this borrower is? Sure, but have they worked with PMLs in the past? And can I talk to those PMLs? Do you ever get pushback? And if you do, how do you handle it?
Yes, I do occasionally get pushbacks. Majority of the time, I don't get as much pushback because part of it is people already know who, you know, I am and my systems. And I give them a heads up before I actually, you know, go and do any work. I say, hey, our process is pretty intense. We ask for a lot of documents, maybe not as much as the hard money, but we do try to do as much checks as we can. So if you are cooperating with us, it will make the process so much smoother. If you don't bother with cooperating with us, then don't waste our time. So I really just... I'm upfront. I'm transparent. I'm like, don't waste my time if you're not going to give me any documents, because I'm not going to give you any money if you're going to, you know, make me chase you for documents, right? If you need the money, then I'm assuming that you're going to cooperate with us. So that's the first thing I said. If you're not going to help us to vet, then we'll just move on from there.
Right. I love how you're setting expectations. Earlier, you were talking about long-term relationships and how it's your preference, right? I mean, it takes a lot of effort to create and establish a great relationship between a private money lender and a borrower. And when you find that relationship, you kind of just want to keep rinsing and repeating, right? And I love what you did there because you set an expectation. You said, all right, with me, I'm going to ask for a lot of documentation. You stick with me and we're going to have a long-term relationship, but this is what to expect. And then you go ahead and you ask for a lot of documentation. So I told you what was going to happen. And then I did what I told you what was going to happen, which builds trust. And these relationships, they're mutual relationships. What advice could you offer to women lenders who are maybe just getting into private money lending, or they haven't yet done their first deal? They're just maybe PML curious about building long-term mutually beneficial relationships.
I would say that if they haven't done a deal yet, to really connect with someone that has, right? Maybe bring a deal to somebody and insert yourself into the process, right? Or you could say, hey, let me just, am I able to partner with somebody? Maybe instead of putting $100,000 in, maybe you're saying, hey, maybe I can do $25,000, $50,000 and I'll partner with somebody else. Or you can work with a capital raiser like myself, right? Where I can walk you through the process. We'll do the underwriting, we do the vetting for you, and we make sure that, you know, all the documents and information is ready at your fingertips when you are ready to go. Right. Part of our process as well as a connector or capital raiser is we stay with our lenders all the way through until they get paid out. Right. So we're doing the follow up. So, you know, that there's someone on your team, you know, that there is support if you need support. Right. And someone to kind of ask questions and satisfy any type of concerns or, you know, even just educating yourself with that process. And that's how I learned, right? I do my first deal and I was like, maybe I go partner out with somebody. And the next deal I did was I did it with another capital raiser, and she taught me how to raise money. She taught me how to secure myself more. And she, you know, showed me the process, the systems. And that's how I learned, right? And I'm handing it off to other people that I want to learn that process. So if you're not comfortable lending, go partner up with somebody that has done lending. Go learn the process. It's not a race, right? And when you're ready, then that's the point where you say, okay, I think I've educated myself. Maybe, like I said, you don't have to do the full amount, but you can do some amount that you can get your feet wet. You know, don't go into high risk, high return deals. Don't just look at the numbers and look at the returns and say, oh my gosh, I'm going to get, you know, 50% return. Most likely you'll never see that return, right? I would start off people with a lower risk deal, low return deals, really solid borrowers, good track history, you know, and good references, right? If you're first time, don't go with a first time flipper, right? Don't go with someone that is new, right? And nobody knows what the hell they're doing, right? So I would say if you're new, your brand's new, do go with someone that has reputation, go with someone that has credibility, go with someone that is known to have good referrals. And therefore you drastically buy down your risk when you are trying to test the waters.
That's so good. Tell me about a habit that has been a game changer for your success. For those of you who are hearing from Colin for the first time on this podcast, I want to share with you that just over the past year, I've seen his business explode, and he is clearly making changes to level up. And so with that context, Colin, what is the habit that's been a game changer for your success?
One of my habits is helping people. So when I was trying to do more deals, it became apparent when even more deals came when I was trying to help people succeed, right? So then made me even drive me to improve my systems, because the safer my systems, the safer the process, then there's more people that want to trust your system and use your system and go through that process with you, knowing that there's, you know, obviously not zero risk, but the risk is dramatically reduced when you go through the deal through that system. And you know, just trying to help as much many people as I can. I think folks know me for helping newbies trying to get their first deals, and that's what I try and do. A lot of people get stuck in the, you know, analysis paralysis zone, right? And that was me for, before I started, 10, 12 months, just educating myself, not knowing how to take action, not knowing how to do it safely. I just did it anyway. But if you're going to try and get in, you know, and you want to jump in, but you don't want to jump fully in, but you want to dabble your toes in and just get proof of concept, then, you know, that was what I was doing. I would say, hey, if you want someone safe, I have someone safe. I have a good borrower. I have, you know, people that are really successful in what they do. So then I help people get in and walk. Some people would just be like, hey, you know what? I just want to do a small amount and look at the documents and just be part of the process. And that's what I did. I just started helping people. And the more people that I helped, the more people came to me, because people was like, oh, I need help in this. And it's not just from a lending perspective, but, you know, from advices, you know, people ask for help and, hey, should I do this deal? You know, like you said, you know, hey, I got this deal. Well, I'm not going to charge you charge you a fee or anything like that. I'll just, you know, help you underwrite it real quick. And I say, you know, Lila, don't do this deal, right? Run me through the numbers. I can do it in like under 3 minutes, right? And to tell you why it's not a good deal. And that's so important, to educate people and make sure that nobody else gets, you know, gets into bad deals.
I love that. And that is so helpful to the beginner. You know, we also have lenders that, you know, are 10 deals in or more who are listening. And, you know, earlier in our conversation, we touched on your scaling. I mean, you're scaling your deal flow, you're scaling Boston Home Services. How has your work in the home service business and growing that informed your approach to private money lending?
Yeah, so in the home service industry right now, we have a landscaping company and a laundromat business, and we're slowly trying to look at other businesses to acquire. Not so much from a lending perspective, but we are trying to help people be partners. It's not, a lot of people want to get into business buying or be business of, you know, partners of a business. And that's where a lot of this comes into play as well, because in business buying, you want to get more partners, right? You want to have partners along the way. And our company right now has Benjamin Huang, myself, Kyle Huber, right? And Leah Merga. And we're just, you know, we have different roles in our company, but we also try to, right now we're trying to scale. We're trying to take each business as we acquire them and 10x it, right? And make it much more profitable, and then bring on a new business. But along the way, we're asking people, hey, are you interested in being a partner? And we can, you know, bring you along the way. And that's what Benjamin did when he acquired the laundromat. You know, he brought on a bunch of capital partners. They came in. You can check us out on Instagram as well, right? They came in. You know, they invest a little bit of money, and then now they're part owners in a laundromat. And as we grow, and then we grow together, right? So that's super super nice to have. It's rewarding to see when we first did our first distribution check a couple months ago. It was really nice, exciting. It's an exciting milestone to hit. So
I hear a theme in all of these gems that you are sharing, Colin, and it's people. Find a way to be useful, help people along the way, work together, and that's really the key to scaling.
Yes, 100%. The community, the people, it's not just, you know, about the numbers or the deals. It's about how you surround people, who you're surrounded around, with, and who you do business with, right? It's so important to build that relationship and, partner up and squad up, like they said, right? And move the needle together.
That's right. Together we're better. That's what I love about this industry. Real estate investing is so unlike any other industry that I've worked in because it is truly collaborative. I guess it's really the case in any business that no dollar was ever made without at least two people there.
That's right.
but here, whether it's buying businesses or investing in real estate backed deals, private money lending, fixing, flipping, whatever it is, the more people are involved, the faster the money moves, the more everybody makes. And best of all, our very best friends end up being the people we work with day in and day out. Colin, I just want to thank you for coming on to Grow with Lila today to talk with us about your journey, about how you've grown from a private money lender into a capital raiser and someone who is scaling Main Street small businesses to 10x. I want to encourage our listeners to connect with you, Colin. Where can they find you and learn more and follow along with your journey?
Yeah, so you can hit me up on Instagram at Colin Yeap, Colin Yeap, or you can follow me on Facebook as well. Colin, first name, last name, Colin Yeap.
Colin, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And if you're looking to begin your private money lending journey, as I have, I've got a resource for you. It's a cheat sheet. It's a roadmap I wish I had had. It's a treasure map that reveals plain as day the obstacles faced by every PML and the 10 most common and most costly mistakes made by women who are new to private money lending. And best yet, how to avoid them. Whether you've not yet done your first deal or you've been skating by on sheer dumb luck, this freebie could save you tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of wasted dollars and so much time. Other women have shared these hard lessons learned so you don't have to fall flat on your face and instead can better manage your risk and maximize your wins. Download your I Want to Make Money, Not Lose It cheat sheet today at growwithlila.com/mistakes. That's growwithlila.com/mistakes. That's it for today's episode. I'm your host, Lila Zayed. If you have a pal who could use this episode or more like it, please, please share the link. And if you haven't yet, hit subscribe and follow this podcast so you never miss a thing. I can't wait to connect again next week at the same time, same place. In the meantime, here's to your health, your wealth, your freedom, and your joy.